Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Roamcast, Earthrealm's ultimate Mortal Kombat podcast, the official voice of Mortal Kombat Online. Prepare yourselves as we plunge into the depths of the Mortal Kombat multiverse, bringing you well-known and significant members of the Mortal Kombat community. I'm your host, the Mortal Kombat fan, Tim. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host and our very own lore master, Yanni.
No. I should have removed that.
Welcome, Yanni. Welcome, Yanni, to the Roamcast.
Thank you, Ben. This is the Roamcast, where every warrior has a story to tell. And today's combatant is Kenshi himself, Noah Flader. Welcome.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Noah, thank you so much for joining us today. We're super excited to have you on. Not only are you the face model for Kenshi, but you also performed the motion capture for Mortal Kombat 1 for a lot of the characters. Before you worked on the game, when were you first introduced to Mortal Kombat?
Just like in general? God, like six-year-old Noah dressing up as Sub-Zero for Halloween.
That's awesome. I did the same.
Yeah, nearly like my childhood was Power Rangers. Like I dressed up as the Red, White, and Green Ranger. And then Sub-Zero Scorpion as a kid growing up. Like those were the only things I wanted to do for Halloween. So I don't know. I'm probably like 6 or 7 years old as a kid running around my neighborhood. That's the earliest memory. I think it honestly was the original Mortal Kombat movie. Like once that came out, I think that jump-started the fandom for childhood Noah.
Was Sub-Zero your favorite character, or was that just your character that you chose that year?
I don't know. I think it was because it was blue and he shot ice, and Scorpion was really cool, but they didn't like really establish like the fire element as much for Scorpion. So maybe as a kid, I resonated more with the VFX of like ice being shot out and like how strong Sub-Zero looked. I definitely loved Sub-Zero like crazy as a kid.
Did you have a favorite Mortal Kombat game, or was it the movies that kind of brought you into it?
I genuinely think it was a movie that brought me into it. And then there wasn't like a specific game that I like loved. It was just always at the arcade. So anytime we'd go play, it's the usual Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Tekken. You kind of just play all of them and you just like... Yeah. Have to have favorites in all of them. So that's kind of how it started for me.
I think we sort of skipped over this, but I'm curious as to who your favorite character is now at this point in time. It has to be one on our mind.
It's so hard because I don't know, like playing wise, if I'm actually playing MK1, I really enjoyed doing the motion capture for Liu Kang and I love playing him. I've been doing Taekwondo since I was 4 years old. So the art of kicking is like everything to me. So I love playing Liu Kang. I think he plays a lot easier than Kenshi. Everybody's like, Kenshi's hard to play. But if you can learn how to use Sento at the same time, he's so OP. But it's either, for me, it's a tie between Liu Kang, Raiden, and of course, Kenshi. Those are like my top three favorites. They're so fun to play.
Nice choices there, especially with Kenshi. I say this as a Kenshi player too. So since the stress test, I was all in on getting those combos in. So I definitely know what you mean. It was hard.
How much of a fan favorite Kenshi really was before. Like, probably going off tangent, but when I did the mocap for Kenshi, I had no idea who he was. I'm terrible because I didn't play MK10 and I had no idea. They're like, oh, think Blind Swordsman. And I was like, the only reference is that I grew up watching Zatoichi. The Blind Swordsman, like old black and white Japanese movies. So I was like, oh, think Zatoichi. And then we ended up doing all the motion capture and doing all the stuff for him. I didn't do Sento. So I'm like, there's a whole other performer that did Sento, which is really cool.
Oh, wow.
So doing Kenshi and seeing it come to life, I had zero expectations of what he would look like, how it would turn out, With everybody else, I knew who Sub-Zero was. I know who Raiden is, even Reptile. But when I got
hired, classics.
When I got hired to do the game, they showed me character design of everybody and the direction they think they were going to go with, except Kenshi. He was like the only one that they didn't really have a rough sketch for at the time. So I think as I started working on him in the later years of development, they just started giving him more love. So it was really cool to see him unfold. It's been insane.
How did you end up getting chosen for the motion capture part of all of this? How did they bring you into it?
Dude, DM me on Instagram. So a lot of the animators had already been following me on Instagram for years, they said. And I know that Carlos wanted to possibly retire at that time. So they were looking for somebody to pass the torch. And they intentionally wrote MK11 to restart the timeline and have the option. And Carlos said that he wanted to bring somebody that was younger, had a fresher face, brought in different styles of martial arts. And they wrote me in mind years ago to be able to come into the franchise and do all of these things. But they reached out, I think, on Instagram. Then it was an email. And then it was an official like call. I think it was like 15 animators and designers on a call. And we got to work. So it was crazy.
It was crazy as a Mortal Kombat fan seeing you actually involved, because I remember watching the Gameology videos with you and Gemma Nguyen. And you were doing the combo recreations and such. And that was awesome. So then to actually see you officially doing it was like, what?
Yeah. That was the icing on the cake. Once we did the recreates, and that was like a separate like job in itself, was just the producers of Gameology just reached out to me. He's like, hey, dude, I'm a huge fan of you. I'm doing a series. Would you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. And they were paying and it was fun. And then it just like started snowballing. Then we were just like, oh, what if we did this? What if we did this? And it just genuinely just blew up the way that it did. And that was really the icing on the cake, because the animators had already been following me. But you also got to convince the producers, right? So it's like you show the producers like, hey, look at this dude. He's literally just copying all of our moves. He could be the guy. So I think that's genuinely cool. How it started to happen. Yeah.
Did they bring you on for motion capture 411, or did they just bring you straight into one?
Just straight into one. Dude, my contract's at MK12.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this was early
on. All of my official paperwork, like in the beginning, it said MK12. And then they started to come up with the entire rebrand idea. I know that in the beginning, for the character design, they all had an intention of, Noah, this is an origin story game. You're going to be showing how Raiden becomes a god. And I'm like, yo, what the hell? That's so cool. So I know that the intention was there, but to have the balls just to be able to call it MK1, I was like, I had no idea that was happening. That was crazy. I think that was like a later decision.
It's made it so confusing as well, because we've got so many Mortal Kombat 1s now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how many are there? Are there the original game, the movie?
Yeah. The new game. What else is there, Phantom? Sure, I know I'm missing at least two.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I know that they really wanted to make it known that they're trying to do a complete rebrand and start from scratch. And it's insane that I got chosen. I don't know how true this is, but Carlos and the other directors and producers told me I'm the first motion capture artist to also be face scanned for a performer. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
I know that Carlos did the motion capture and like it wasn't even motion capture back then, but he was like recorded as the character himself. Mm-hmm. But once they started going into the actual motion capture direction, they said they've never had a motion capture performer be the face model of a character ever. So
how did that happen? I mean, you're doing motion capture and did they just choose you and say, hey, come in, be a face model, or was there a process? Like, what happened here?
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. So I worked on the game for about 2.5 years. It was about 2.5 years of filming in the middle of COVID. It was nuts. So I would say for the first 2 years, I had no idea that they had intentions of scanning me as a face model. And once we were done with the game, I just got an email from the producer. His name's Richmond. So Richmond reached out to me and he was like, hey, Noah, we're actually thinking about getting you in studio, but we only need you for like 30 minutes or an hour. I live in LA, so I'm not going to fly to Chicago for an hour. And that's how we started the email. And I was like, why do you need me for an hour? That's kind of weird. You don't want to ruin the surprise, but you've actually been picked to be a face scan model. That's so cool. I had no idea what that meant at all. This is like my first time doing any of this stuff because I come from more film and television side, not video games. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, what does that mean? He's like, you're going to be the face of one of the main characters, but we don't want to tell you till you get in studio. So I was like, okay, that sounds crazy. They took care of everything for me, got out there. I was originally supposed to be face scanned as Sub-Zero. So I was like, oh, that's what they face scanned me for, was Sub-Zero.
Oh, so, wow.
We did the face scan. Everything was super cool. I even took pictures in the hallway with Sub-Zero because I was like so excited. Like, I'm going to be Sub-Zero. This is crazy. And then when the trailer came out, I was like, I swear to God, that's not me. Then I see Kenshi drip the fuck out, come out in a full suit. And I was like, yo, that's me. What the hell? What is happening? So I instantly like text the animators and I was like, wait, am I Kenshi? And they were like, dude, we switched you because your face was covered the entire game as Sub-Zero. And he's like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
They were like, we literally did not want your face covered the whole game. And we switched you to Kenshi so you get more face recognition. And he's going to be, they anticipated Kenshi being more of a crowd favorite going into this game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I had no idea. And I was like, literally just like the Mortal Kombat gods, like on my side, blessing me through the journey of unintentional decisions being made that I had no control over. So it was crazy. I just, you know, I was out of the loop for half of it.
So was this your first motion capture gig or had you done mocap before this?
I've never done mocap before. It was my first job.
Wow.
I'd ever done that. It was definitely different than film, you know, having 120 cameras or whatever it is in the room. I'm more primarily focused on acting than I am stunt work. So when they hired me, sometimes productions know, usually they don't know. And I said, hey guys, I'm not really a stuntman. Part of being a stuntman includes being able to do face reactions, getting hit, and then of course doing big falls. I was like, that's a skill set that I've stopped training a long time ago because I've been able to act a lot more. And that's really where I want to push my career. If I'm not a good fit for the franchise, do not worry about it. Totally okay. They were super okay with that. They brought me in. So when you're playing the game, anytime any of the 8 characters I design are losing, that is not me. I'm the fighting for.
I only win.
Yeah, I pretty much did that and a few other things in the game. But, you know, it does provide opportunities to bring in stunt guys and have more jobs so other people can do those roles. But yeah, it was really interesting designing all that for the characters.
I'm just curious as to how the face modeling went, the face scanning. So we've actually had the face model for Quan Chi come in and he's talked about his experience with it. But yeah. they WB and NRS, I suppose, own the rights to his face now in perpetuity. Is that a similar thing to you?
Yeah, but I think it's exclusive to that game. And I mean, the process is really easy. You're like, okay, let's see you smile. Let's see you be angry. Let's see you be shocked. Let's see you be just, you go through all the facial expressions for, you know, whatever they need. And I think I was done in 30 minutes, honestly. I don't think it was a full hour, but it was really, really damn simple. We got everything very quickly. We were chatting in between. Just like, oh, how's life going? Oh, yeah, we're planning on releasing a game at this time, blah, blah, blah. It was very simple, but they did make it a big deal for me because Carlos, before and after being face scanned, and the old creative director for MK1, I think his name is Brendan. I forget Brendan's last name, but there were a few people that made it very clear to me, like, Noah, this is a really big deal. Like, congratulations. We purposefully wanted the real martial artist to be able to become one of the main faces of the franchise. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I hope that it's done that. I definitely feel the fandom has gone crazy for me on my side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You've been immortalized as Kenshi. So,
yeah, it's literally insane. So, I mean, the other thing I didn't think about was when Brendan face scanned me, he was like, just so you know, like, you're in the rest of the franchise. Like, we rebooted the franchise. Like, you're going to be the guy going forward. And I was like,
that's awesome.
Okay, sure, whatever that means. And then I started seeing the effects. In the film industry, I just take everything face value. I'm just like, cool, man, happy to be here. Then you start to see it fucking like really come out and you're like, holy cow, I think I'm in this.
Yeah. So with the motion capture work, were you also doing the mocap for Kenshi during all of your cutscenes and things like that too?
I only worked on so there's three departments that produce the game. It's divided into three different sections. You have the in-game fighting team, which is, you know, the game itself. Then you have the cinematic team, which is all the cutscenes and stuff like that. And then you have the fatality team. So fatality teams is very specific to the fatalities. And then what's the other? It's not a fatality, but it's like a combo ender. I forget the name
brutality.
Of it.
Oh, brutalities.
Oh, brutalities. Thank you. Yeah. So they also do the brutalities, I believe. I only worked with two of the teams. I did not do the cutscene teams. So I did those two units and pretty much led them solo by myself. They actually gave me a stunt coordinator credit for the game, which I didn't ask for, but it was very nice of them. But
it's really nice
because I was designing so much. The most creative freedom, or I should say the least creative freedom I had, was Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I guess I was a part of the beta test team where they were designing the beta for how the game would run, or I guess that would be like the demo for the game. Carlos did half of Sub-Zero and Scorpion, and I came into the other half. I didn't realize, but that's how it was starting. I thought I was already in it. They were like, no, this is just the demo to show WB, hey, this is how the game is going to work. You know, when they greenlight the rest of the funding, we do the rest of the game. So that's kind of what happened. But since they were so specific on how Sub-Zero and Scorpion should be, I had almost no creative freedom. Mm-hmm. All of the six other characters I designed, I had a ton of creative freedom. Like they really, you know, I told them, I was like, hey guys, you're paying me the most any performer's ever been paid. And you're having me have a lot of freedom. I need to do research. I need to do homework. I want to know as much lore on the characters. And I want to show you guys what I'm thinking. I'd say 90% of the time they said yes to everything I said. There was always a few small things where it's like, oh, we have another character that's doing something like that already. I'm like, yeah, no problem. Smoke was actually written to be a character that wasn't going to be utilized as much. And I saw the design and I was the one that recommended, hey, what if I give him a karambit instead of a normal knife? And can I show you guys my Pinjoxi lot? So I started designing like crazy stuff for Smoke. And I think he became like a huge fan favorite as well. Just in
he's
the
one
way
of my favorite characters. So I'm so thankful to hear you say this right now.
In the design room, he was very blank. Like it wasn't, they didn't really know what direction to have him go. And I think that's the beauty of Mortal Kombat is that the spirit lies in the fighting, right? Like once the designers and the animators see him move, they just start going crazy. They're like, oh, what if he can teleport and flash here and come down and do this and move here? So really, the fighting inspires the entire team to be able to start designing even more, especially when it's such a blank canvas. Like a lot of the characters were very blank canvas. Liu Kang and Raiden, they knew where they wanted him to go. And I just tried to add as much spice on top of them. And it just really inspired the room. It was so fun to watch like unfold as we were doing it.
Well, you mentioned six characters that you had a lot of input on. Who are they?
So the eight I did were Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I did half of it with Carlos. And then I did Raiden, Kung Lao, Liu Kang, Smoke, Reptile, and Kenshi. So that's eight. Yeah. Yeah. So it was really fun. Reptile was awesome. I did only his human form. So when he's in human form, being like Ninja Reptile, that's me. They brought in a specialist that does animal style movement for motion capture to do his lizard movement. So I was like geeking the hell out. His name is Chris McClure. Great stuff.
Oh, Chris,
you guys know Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, he's so good. This is our cat. This is Suki.
Hello.
Suki.
Yep. But anyways, yeah, Chris is fantastic. And watching him work and like us putting our specialties together into one character just adds a whole other layer of things that you don't think about normally.
Yeah, really. So, I mean, as far as your Kenshi work, you as a person seem to embody Kenshi, or I guess Kenshi seems to embody you. Like, it's almost like they took you and stuck you in the video game. Like, with your personality, your posture, like, everything about the two of you seems so similar. What was kind of your process for bringing this character in particular to the game, like, with your motion capture work?
For Kenshi itself?
Yeah.
I honestly, God, I don't want to sound too arrogant. But I've grown up in the martial arts my entire life. Like, since I was born, there's pictures of my dad stretching my legs out before I can even walk. And I'm half Japanese and I'm half white. And my mom's Japanese side has a lineage directly coming from the Minamoto samurai clan, or their nickname is called the Genji clan. They ruled over Japan for 3,000 years before there were three or four different clans that had to gang up on them to try to like outrule them. But essentially what happened was the Minamoto clan got wiped out and they transitioned their last name to be able to go into hiding. It is literally like in my blood that like the Taira clan that's, you know, been resembled with Takahashi. It's the same freaking thing. And I'm like, I don't know if they did research on me or how it's just too perfect written for me that I had no idea what was happening. But I think the essence of being a modern day, you know, warrior, like I am constantly training. I train about 4 to 5 hours every single day, Monday through Friday. I have a whole martial arts production team that all train with me. We try to embody the martial arts in our everyday practice and everything we do. And I always try to make sure that we're doing everything we can in our careers and our personal lives with a moral compass involved as much as we can. I think a lot of those elements just start to resonate with Kenshi and how he was written. And I think the animators getting to know me in the room, I asked Brendan, because spoiler, I'm working on another video game and I can't talk about it yet, but I am under super strict NDA, but it is for a different studio. And I, you know, was able to talk to Brendan about it during this production. And I was like, you know, how did you face scam me or why did you pick me? And he was like, we really wanted to pick somebody that embodied the modern day like warrior spirit, and you're like living proof. If anyone is like as Mortal Kombat as it gets in modern day life, it's literally you. He also said some really nice other things. He's like, you're also good looking, blah, 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 blah. None of that stuff matters. But it's like all of these things come together. And that's why, you know, the look, the energy, you know, the presence that you bring in the room. He was like, it just inspired the production company, the team, NRS, to just elevate the storyline a little bit. That's what he told me. I don't know how much of it's true, but it was all very nice words. So yeah, it was quite interesting. But the crazy part with Kenshi is that like, it's literally my history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were just saying that immediately.
Yeah. I don't know how they knew that. There's no way they knew. So
that's crazy.
Just
headhunted for your ancestors.
Yeah. My Sento is whispering in the writer's ear. That I have no idea. It was crazy.
Well, you mentioned obviously going through the lore, understanding the characters and such, as well as you were sort of designing their fighting style. I'm curious as to the approach you took by hearing, for example, their lore when choosing a fighting style. How did you go about that in general?
That's a really good question. You know, a really easy example, I talk about Kenshi. Kenshi obviously is Japanese, so he should be doing Japanese style sword work. There's a lot of different types of sword work that look very different. The polar opposite, I'd say, is Chinese style. It's very flowery, very like flourishing style movements. And Kenshi just should not move that way if he has a Japanese style background. So I love Japanese sword work because it's very precise. It's very strong. I resonate with Japanese style sword work because it feels powerful to me. It's a little slower in the way that he should move because every intentional hit should have a focus and power in the way he moves. So I wanted somebody like Smoke with a smaller weapon, like a Karambit, to just be 10 times faster. But I wanted Kenshi to be very intentional in the way he moves. Because I just think that resonates more with the culture and how the Japanese think a little bit too. So that was a big one. The other really interesting thing was when we were in studio and I was doing the sword work, it wasn't coming across on motion capture exactly what we needed. And then Carlos had the brilliant idea of, he's like, hey, Noah, why don't you just try to close your eyes and do it? And I was like, okay.
That's cool.
The minute that I have the sword, so I'm here, the minute I close my eyes, I do this, which is like a small head tilt, because now I'm like thinking about listening instead of like looking.
Yeah.
That little bit adds so much to the character and the way he moves.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was calling Carlos my Phil Jackson on the court. Like, MJ can't perform without his coach there. And I was like, dude, you're literally like my coach, Phil. And he was loving that. And I was like, I could not have brought the characters to life the way I did without the guidance of Carlos. And he's just like the cherry on top recommendations, like guiding my performances. And I'm like, there are about like three or four people that I've worked with that have guided my performances in the right direction. He's one of those people, like S tier level performers, directors in the martial arts, like film industry. I just wrapped on a movie with, do you guys know who Michael Jai White is?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I just did a movie with him. We had two massive fight scenes. I play the antagonist against him throughout the whole film. He says, hopefully this film does for me what it did for Scott Adkins with Boyka. Oh. And I put Michael Jai White right next to Carlos as far as like directing and the martial arts experience as well. I would say Carlos for the martial arts portion is probably a little bit ahead of Michael, only because Michael is so focused on directing, acting himself, and focusing on the script, where focusing on too many things pulls away from your martial arts, I would say. When mm-hmm. Carlos's like full-time job is just think about the martial arts performance that's being told through the story. So they're both like freaking legends at this like super high rank level. And I've been lucky enough to work with these guys, but like I just look up to Carlos so much. So
and both were involved in Mortal Kombat as well, technically.
Yeah, technically.
Yeah.
100%. So I actually got a missed call from Michael. He left me a voicemail right before I jumped on with you guys, and they want reshoots with me. So I got to call him back after this call eventually.
But I mean, just while we're on this topic, because I'm very curious, you've mentioned Kenshi, you've mentioned Smoke, and the reptile fighting style is quite interesting as well. How did you go about deciding on how to go about him?
Yeah, dude, that one was the hardest one because there was a specific style, and it's very Shaolin Kung Fu inspired, where they have something called like a leopard style or leopard fists. So leopard fists are here, and I just wanted to like have, it's so hard to do because I wanted his base to be like more of a ninja here, like that stance, feeling it. But when he attacks, you feel like the reptile movement come out and back into the ninja stance. So it's like the beginning, the middle, and the end of something tell a story in how you move. I think the beginning being that ninja form, and when he attacks, just having elements that replicate an animalistic feeling, and then it comes back into ninja mode. That's kind of what I tried to do. I hope it worked.
Oh, it did. Like, and that's the perfect story for Reptile. Like you incorporated his story into his fighting style. Like,
yeah,
that's amazing.
I definitely tried my best. And, you know, it's easier just to be in like, you know, Shaolin animal style kung fu the whole time, where he's just like in this like wild, like, you know, strong pose. But I didn't feel that like brought his, you know, ninja shinobi side out as well, because he is that first.
Yeah.
You know? So
is that why you picked it maybe over something like Snake, for example?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that Snake movement. The problem with Snake is that I didn't want him to feel too fluid, because I felt like the monster that he becomes, I mean, I know Reptile and Snake are pretty similar, but he doesn't look like a snake to me. He looks like, I don't know, like freaking insane. Like he's a monster.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be too fluidy, because the snake style is like very like loose and watery, right? Yeah. I didn't want that to be Reptile. I thought he was like really strong when he fights. But I think I added elements of that in other characters. I'm trying to remember. Actually, I don't think I did. I think the female characters have a little bit of that. But essentially, like, I try to make sure there isn't too much fluidity in the movements. I researched the past MK games, and they do a lot of that Chinese style, like very fluid type movements. I think it takes away from the strength of the character if it's overrun. And
yes,
I can't remember which character I did it for. I think it was either Liu Kang or Kung Lao. there are moments where you can hit something hard, be soft, and then come back into the pose. And I think that transition, hard, soft, and then hard, are like really powerful things to watch. And it's just blending styles constantly. And then it's the idea that I have. And then it's us in the room trying to make it work. And then Carlos is the one that's like, you're three quarters off. You're almost there. We're, you know, get it better. We can do it. Keep going. It's almost there. One more time. Or, you know, he's just pushing me to get it to that like legendary status that I'm chasing after. And there are a lot of times where I'm like filming myself too, because I need to see if it's working. Because in my head, it might be very different than what I'm actually doing. And I have a lot of, I have one story I want to share with you guys. So
yeah,
we did Liu Kang's flying sidekick in the room. And they're like, obviously Liu Kang is very much based off of Bruce Lee. So we wanted some moves that still kept that Bruce Lee energy. So I was like, you know what? I've never really like watched Bruce Lee's flying sidekick. So we put it up on the monitor. And the way they did it back in the 60s was they put the camera super low angle and he just jumps over camera and he does the flying sidekick. So you never see the way he takes off, which is super important, but it looks like for his flying sidekick, he plants both legs and jumps up and does the kick. Yeah. That isn't how I do mine. You plant one leg down. So one leg plants up and then you come up and then kick.
Mm-hmm.
So I do mine differently. And I was like, hey guys, I love Bruce Lee. Like, I am the biggest nerd when it comes to Bruce, but I don't like how that flying sidekick looks for Liu Kang. Let me just show you mine. And if you don't like it, we can do that way. They're like, no problem. And, you know, T-pose, get ready. Go in my stance. What's Liu Kang? Is it here? I think it's this.
Yeah.
So get into stance, run up, do the best flying sidekick I can, land into pose. T-pose done. Now we're in COVID. So all the animators are on a Zoom call and Carlos is in studio and I have one other animator in studio. That's it. So I'm doing all this through freaking Zoom. After I do the flying sidekick, the whole room is dead quiet. And I'm like, oh, they hated it. Cause I'm like, I don't know how to make it better, but I'll try. But I instantly go to like, I suck. Everybody hates this. God damn it. And then I hear one voice just saying like, hey guys, I don't know about you, but I think that was the best flying sidekick the studio has ever seen.
That's so cool.
I was like, you know what? And they're like, we don't need another take. That was one and done. You got it. That was perfect.
Wow.
So I was like, oh shit. Bruce Lee, goated for life. Love you. You started the idea. But in the 60s too, the 50s and 60s when Bruce was one of the first people that was like trying to even do flying kicks. Mm-hmm. But it's like back then, I feel like they were experimenting. They were just trying to figure out like, how the hell do you kick somebody in the head and fly through the air? There wasn't like really technique that was being built. And that was the start of it. But now,
especially Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Like his whole, everything he did was experimentation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he set the groundwork for people like me to come in and know that there is a structure, know that we can, our job every generation should be to make it better. Not to say that mine was better than Bruce's, but, you know, I was just honored that the studio, you know, one and done, loved it. We were able to move on. And that's, I forget Liu Kang's flying dragon kick, but it's the flying psychic. There's a name for it. It's like dragon steel,
I think
something. What is it?
I think it's Flying Dragon, actually.
Flying Dragon?
It's changed a few. It's changed between games a lot, though.
Gotcha, yeah. And then they also asked me to, you know, hey, Noah, you know, Liu Kang, the bicycle kick? They're like, you know, the bicycle kick was iconic for Liu Kang, but we want to go a different direction. Do you have ideas? And I was like, yes, I do. So gave them my input and we did it and they loved it. So I was like, okay. I haven't heard any hate on it. I hope there's not, but I think everyone's liking his new bicycle kick.
It's a very interesting take on it. A very unique flavor to the bicycle kick that we all know, especially, I mean, without the audio cue, of course.
But Totally.
No, but it's great. I'm pretty sure everybody's loved it.
Yeah. It grounds it in realism a bit more too, which it's cool to see in the new game.
Yeah. And it's just all of us experimenting. It's my crazy ideas of what I'm capable of doing. And everybody rocked with it. So I gave a lot of love to Liu Kang and Raiden. Raiden specifically, because Carlos is the one coaching me in the corner. Yeah. So I'm like, holy hell, I got to make this as good as I can. So I really try to give Raiden as much love as I could as well to every character. But I have such a special place in my heart for the Art of Kicking. And those were the characters I really got to like go off on my kicking with them. So
that's that was fun. Funny that you love kicking so much, because your work for Osu Films, I haven't seen a lot of kicking from when you're doing like your stuff with Kenshi, your fan short film featuring Katana. It's garnered like so much
you
attention.
Watched it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I did. We both did. Like
as
we
well as the
with our fans. Yeah. I love it.
Even the other one, not the one without Katana. Like those were some awesome little short films.
Thank you. I mean, my team is big fans of everything that we're able to do. Like we're a part of this franchise, and it's like, how many times do people have the opportunity to make something like that, you know?
Oh, so, yeah, really?
It's been really fun. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm curious, what inspired you to create this project? Like, what were some of the and what are some of the highlights of your production process for making these films?
It's a great question. I mean, like I said, how many times does somebody have the opportunity to make this? Like, you know, there were a lot of people involved in MK1, other voice actors, other face models, other stunt performers, but I have such a good production team that like everyone is so talented. Like even just my script writer and director, his name is Aaron Field. He's one of my newest members, been with me for only a year. And just the script, I'm like, damn, dude, like I'm not good at writing MK style dialogue. That is not my forte. And he just got it like so on the head that I'm like, dude, this is such a good script. I love this. And I have such great costume designers. Emily, who played Katana, is like one of my best friends. I've been filming with her probably like 7 or 8 years. So there were people that were asking me like, oh, why Katana? Like, why not a different character? Just why her? And I was like, I like making films with my friends. That's what it really just comes down to. Like, I want to make shit, cool shit with my friends. And Emily's a pro. She's so good at doing her homework, bringing it to life, doing everything she can to be involved, because I don't really like working with actors necessarily that just want to show up, do their job and head out. Like she's so immersed in like the relationship with my team and trying her best to do the choreography. And she's not a stunt woman at all. But I think that me personally, the fighting is so important, but bringing the character to life and how she looks and acts and moves is almost even more important. And I think Emily did the best job that she possibly could. And it was really fun. I think that's the most important thing is like, are we having fun doing it? We had such a blast. But why did we do it? Because I am the face model of Kenshi and I could. We just wanted to give more to the fandom. That was fun for us to do. I hope I get to do more. I'm pretty busy right now, but I would love to somehow explore it more. I don't know if I would gain, you know, support from NRS or something to be able to go and make something bigger.
Lately, we don't really see many of these fan films coming out unless they're actually sponsored. I mean, we're past the days of, for example, MK Rebirth with, for example, Michael J. White. Yeah. And moving into Legacy. And now it's kind of become a thing where it's more of a rarity because of copyright being enforced. Do you think that it's more of a risk? I mean, you're involved in the actual franchise itself now. But for example, if a random content creator wanted to do something like this, do you feel like it could be potential risk that might not be worth that risk in comparison to, say, you doing it as the man behind Kenshi?
No, I think anybody can do it. I think it's only risky when you have, like, if you stole the script of MK2, you know, and you're just like, I'm going to actually tell the story of what the studio wrote, which is like, I don't even have the script, or like, I don't even know what they're planning on doing. So I don't think it's really risky for anybody at all. I think now more than ever is the best time to be able to produce content and make stuff. The problem with Mortal Kombat is that I think the hardest genres to do are anything fantasy or sci-fi is the hardest to produce, and anime, like live action anime. Those are the hardest genres to make come to life. So I think a big part of it is just the difficulty of being able to make it work. Like my costume for Kenshi was about a $3,000 costume.
Yeah, it was awesome, actually. It was very accurate. Yeah.
Like, thank you. And like, of course, I have to make sure that it looks as good as it can be. But most people are probably not willing to go to those lengths to make it at that level. And then again, there's just so many layers, like, let alone the cinematography, the lighting, all that stuff. You got to have a legit costume that looks the part. You got to be able to know how to act, and you got to be able to have some kind of fighting. Otherwise, if you don't marry those three to a high caliber, it just comes off, in my opinion, very tacky. And that's okay if people are just celebrating the fandom, right? But I personally wanted to give something that felt like it could have been attached into the fandom after the game was over. So I actually talked to Michael about doing something Mortal Kombat wise. It's like, you want to be Jax again, bro? And he was super down. That man's is freaking busy. So I don't think it's a matter of if he's down. I think it's a matter of if I can get him to sit down for one day to do it.
Oh my gosh. I'm crossing my fingers for that one. Like,
I showed him what we were doing. He's like, damn, Noah, this is really cool. I was like, yeah, Jax, come and play with us.
And the best part is you actually, I mean, a bit of a spoiler for the episode, kind of the episode, the fan film that you did, but you do sort of talk to Jax in it.
Yeah. So yeah, literally. So,
now, yeah, one thing you said about sort of embodying the characters in the actual film, the way you portray them. There was one part that I really was impressed with how you managed to, because Kenshi's known for, well, Sento, his telekinetic abilities, but also one thing that we have to bear in mind is his hand-to-hand combat. And you found an ingenious way of bringing that in.
Yeah.
Throwing Sento at the spirit. Yeah. Which allowed you to show off your hand-to-hand combat.
That was a big thing. I'm glad you noticed that. That's so funny. That was one of the things that I was really pushing for in the design when we were doing the choreography. I actually worked with, Michael Giant White's previs and fight design team. Their team is called Art School Dropout. They're based out in New Jersey. Big shout out to those guys. They also did the skeleton design for Kenshi vs. Katana, because having guys come in and build like a skeleton is so important because we're so busy. I'm working with another studio at this moment. I'm taking over a YouTube channel that has 20 million subscribers. Yeah, so that's like a whole other endeavor that I've
a few more than us.
Yeah. My own social media, and I'm planning on doing two movies this year, one with Michael, another with another company as well too. So there's just like so many things. So when I have another team to come in and do the previs work, it saves us an immense amount of time. So once we got that previs, I saw a split moment where there was an opportunity to throw my sword to Sento. And I was like, what if I did like Japanese style, like more karate focused hand combat? Because I wanted all of the movement that Kenshi does to be Japanese inspired. So we did that.
Perfectly done.
Yeah, it was really fun. So I'm glad that you guys noticed that. So it's really cool.
No, it was really great. I recommend anybody watching to check out the fan films. They are a really fun watch, very accurate, and you know, to the characters, very fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I'm curious, you know, with everything that you've done now, like your motion capture, you know, your extensive history, martial arts, you know, OS films, what kind of advice would you give to these aspiring motion capture artists and filmmakers who are looking to break into the industry in the way that you have with like such huge momentum? Are there any lessons that you've learned throughout your career that you'd like to share with the others?
Oh my God, there's a million lessons. I've quickly found out more and more that it is very rare to be a full-time creative. It is extremely rare. I think if you're a full-time creative, you're a part of like the one percenters. And I've been a full-time creative since I was about maybe 2021. And I've been very, very lucky in doing that. But this is not an easy path. I think more than ever, you need to embody as much of that warrior spirit and discipline as you can into your craft, because it is really glamorous and really fun, but it stems from having such focus and dedication to what you do that nothing else should matter to you. And when you have that kind of mindset, I think the world will open up to you and you'll have plenty of opportunities in life. But I think when people are trying to get into the industry, I think it's really important to understand why are you trying to do this? I think everybody's intention in life is very different. And there are a lot of people that have maybe misguided intentions or haven't done enough soul searching. But when I was 15 years old, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want to inspire the world using my martial arts. And I think that I've done that through Mortal Kombat. And I hope I've inspired thousands of people to go and start training and having something for themselves. Whether it's martial arts, it doesn't matter. I think it's really important that everybody has a self-discipline for themselves. I think it's a very powerful thing. And it always leads to happiness because everybody sees how glamorous and all this is. Happiness is not given, it's earned. So I hope that I can inspire people to do that. But if there are people that want to get into this space, I think it's very possible for people to do it. But to be a full-time creative is hard. So to really have such strong intentions and the reason why you're doing it will go a very, very long ways. Because when you have that, I think it resonates in the room with everybody else that I'm just trying my best to inspire other people and bring the best product. When you have somebody like that, that's where they're like, okay, give this guy all of this stuff and outfit him for success, right? Because you represent something bigger than yourself. So for me, that's always been my journey, is my life is so much bigger than just myself. Like even Oz Films, I got such a great group of boys that will like go to hell and back for me. It's because we all believe that we're a part of something bigger than just our own egos to look as cool as we can in front of camera. We're trying to make stuff for other people that inspires them to just go fucking kill it every day. So I think as a creative is really asking like, why do you want to do this? Is it just to look cool or is it a deeper purpose? So yeah, that would be my recommendation. More soul search.
Love it.
You mentioned the word inspire a few times, and I think that's the overall tone of what you're saying. It was very inspirational advice. Thank you.
I try my best.
Moving on to more brutal sort of question.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to ask you, because this has not come up yet, what is your favorite finisher in Mortal Kombat?
Does Liu Kang's universal snap thing, where he like brings them?
Hell yeah, it does.
That one's nuts. Yeah. So I did that one, but we put me on like a stage in the room. Like we built like blocks and like I got up on this thing and just like bare minimum, just like held their like body in the air and just like let them wither away. And they're like, trust me, it's going to look so cool. There were so many moments like that where I felt so dumb. And I was like, if you look at his movement, it is so freaking basic. Like it's nothing. So when I do it, the whole room's like, oh my God, that looks so good. I'm like, are you guys smoking something that I'm not? What do you guys see that I don't? And I see him and I'm like, yo, that is cold. What the hell? So that one was really fun. Like a
That's
funny.
Amazing.
Yeah, like how it turned out. So, but I think seeing that one is just like the most insane and so grand. I'm like, yeah, Luke King being a god is just too much. This is crazy. Yeah.
So Noah, before we let you go, where can our listeners find you?
I am extremely active on my Instagram and TikTok. It's just my name, Noah_Fleder, FLEDER. And we also have my YouTube channel as well, where we're posting all of our fan films, our training vlogs, and other collaborations. So you guys can find me all there just with my name.
Noah, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you on the Realmcast. We appreciate you coming on with us.
Thank you. Of course, hit me up anytime. Let's do another one.
I would love to.
Let's do it.
You can find Yanni and myself, Phantom, on the Mortal Kombat group on Facebook, as well as on our social media pages at Realmcast.
You can also join our official Discord channel hosted on Mortal Kombat Online server through the link in the description, where we discuss Mortal Kombat along with our listeners.
Special thanks to Uppercut Editions for their continued support. The Realmcast is the official podcast of Mortal Kombat Online.
And you can catch up on all episodes of the Realmcast on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, and MortalKombatOnline.com, as well as our links to our live show, The Soul Stream, which can be found on MKO or Realmcast.com. Thank you.